Hi guys, I'm Nick Bester. I'm the founder of Best Athletics, a running coach that runs a little bit myself. And it's been absolutely ages since we've done a Best Athletics podcast. Really looking to ramp these up in the new year. New year, new goals. We'll get the podcast going properly. But there was such a special achievement from one of the athletes that I coach and one of our members, Krista, who's joining me today. And we couldn't miss this opportunity to catch up about it. I actually, I'm her coach. I haven't spoken to her about it since the performance. So I'm catching up with her today on her epic achievements. But basically what she just did at Valencia Marathon was she broke the female marathon record of Isle of Man that had stood for 31 years. She ran Valencia in 2:39 and 10 seconds. And I'm just super excited to hear all about it, hear about her progress, you know, how she come about it, how it was. It's actually inspired me to enter Valencia Marathon myself. I had so much FOMO that I can't miss out. But yo, welcome, Krista. Super excited to chat to you. I know we'd probably rather cheers to a shot of tequila, but we're keeping it healthy today. So shall we start with a shot of Ketone IQ?
Yeah, let's go. love the ketones. Thank you so much
cheers for recommending
those. I think they've difference. My Boston 26.2 glass.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. I kind of cheated and I went for the peach flavored Ketone IQ. So it tastes like rocket fuel, but it's actually easy to take in. I felt like the previous one was really hard and it sort of made it like more of like a challenge to take it in. But yeah, it definitely gives you a buzz, that's for sure. And not that, you know, we need one buzzing after your performance. But do you want to just talk us through it exactly? Like, you know, it's a record that stood for 31 years. So what a phenomenal achievement. Like I always refer to you as the running queen of the Isle of Man, and you're just getting faster and faster and faster. So how does it feel to hold that record, and how did the race play out?
Yeah, that's so kind. Thank you. Queen of the Isle of Man. I'll take that any day. I'm still on a complete high from Valencia, in all honesty. The whole experience is just so surreal and still very overwhelmed and can't quite believe that I've managed to get the Isle of Man record. I think, you know, I was very fortunate. I was able to get my entry upgraded to elite status. So I was right at the front of the pack. I got special warm-up area in this crazy underground car park, running circles with like actual Olympians and whoever it was going to be the winner of the race on the day. We didn't know at that point, but yeah, I think there's a little bit of airtime where I'm on TV. My other half recorded it, and you can tell by my face I just feel like slightly out of place being in that zone. But it's obviously paid out to my advantage by, you know, being able to get to the front of the pack. And I'm very grateful that I was able to get that opportunity. The race itself was amazing. I'm still trying to play everything back from start to finish. It all kind of went so quickly. Obviously quicker than I've ever run before, but from that moment when you get up in the morning and, you know, it's dark and you get yourself to the start line and the race, we kind of stood at the front there and they played the music. And obviously Valencia this year was all quite emotional. Only 2 weeks before, everything was a bit up in the air, whether it was actually going to go ahead because of, you know, the situation, the floods that they've had there. So the silence they had, and then they played the heartbeat, you know, emotions are running high anyway. And then all of a sudden it's time to go. The gun goes off. And it was very fast, I would say, compared to probably other marathons that I've done. This is probably the fastest one. I guess we'll come on to that slightly later. But I remember the first couple of kilometres thinking, you know, this is probably a little bit faster than I want to go out. And definitely the first 5K, I think I went through in about 18 and a half minutes. My 5K PB is like 17:26. So I was thinking like, this is far too fast. And I just remember talking to myself, like, find that 3:46 pace, just settle in, and, you know, just try not work too hard. I think being at the front of the pack, it definitely carries you for a certain point. And while you're riding on that adrenaline, as long as you're not working too hard, just roll with it to some degree. But, you know, just being conscious that, you know, you need to settle in at some point. And then, to be honest, the rest of it is quite a blur until I got to 28 kilometres. When I had a bit of a wake-up call at a water stand, I went to grab a bottle and, I took a sip, and next thing I know, I'm belly down on the floor. It didn't quite work what had happened. My bottle flew out in front of me, so I've kind of missed a drink to some extent. Bounced back up again, and I just remember all the guys around me, because that's what it was just a load of guys. They were like, "Are you okay? You hurt?" And I was like, "I'm fine." It's one of those moments where you just bounce up and carry on. But yeah, in hindsight, I probably think that was a good thing. I think at that point of a race, you probably get a little bit complacent and your legs are almost ticking over, your head might start to switch off a little bit. So in some senses, I was very lucky not to hurt myself too badly. A little graze on my knee and a little cut on my elbow and hands a little bit tender. But yeah, it was probably the wake up I needed at that point. Yeah, all in all, I think that was the only downside of it. I remember the cramps starting to kick in just ever so slightly in my calves. Probably lack of hydration. That was maybe about 35K. I mean, it was very humid. I remember the day before they were saying humidity was due to be 90% at the start of the race, which is really quite high. So I probably didn't hydrate as much as I needed to. And then it's just the usual, like your head starts playing games with you. So I remember getting to 40K and I looked at my watch and I thought, maybe this record's not within reach at this point. I had like 9 minutes to get the record, and I don't know why. Like, I know I can run 2 kilometers in 9 minutes, but I think, like, obviously that's late stage of a race. You just start talking yourself out of things. So even when I got to like 300 meters to go, and you can see you coming down that big amazing blue carpet, and you can see the clock starting to count down. I was just like looking at my watch there, thinking I've got 300 meters. I don't even know how long it takes me to run 300 meters anymore. I don't know. Maybe the record's out of reach at this point, but I'm definitely going to get a PB. So I was just as fast as I could. And obviously, I was going to get it with 300 meters to go. So yeah, I think looking back on my race pictures, like, you know, my face definitely tells a story. Like, I'm just absolutely ecstatic. I knew I had it at that point. So. Yes, it's very surreal, and I genuinely keep asking, like, why me? Anyone's got the ability to go out there and train, but I know I put the work in. But just why me? It's crazy.
Oh, that's awesome. What a story. Thanks so much for sharing. I feel like it's so relatable to people that have run races or have run marathons in the past, where in the beginning your brain works so well and you can do maths and numbers so easily. And then towards the end, when everything is hurting, it's like you definitely doubt yourself. I think, you know, when I broke sub 220 earlier this year as well, I kind of, like, with a kilometer to go, I knew I had it in the bag, provided something silly doesn't happen. And then I started getting emotional because it meant so much to me. And then I was like, I could still blow this. And, you know, you really just, like, try and switch off that brain and just run all the way through to the line and think about it afterwards. But in those last few kilometers, it's really tough. And do you know what? I think with every race, there's a little bit of drama, and each race tells a different story in so many different ways. And thank goodness you actually got back up after your fall. You know, it could have ended very differently there, but we get knocked down and get back up again. And it's nice to know that it didn't take up too much time and there's, you know, no long-term damage. But I know, from, like, recent experiences as well, and I think a lot of people listening to this can relate, that water points are such a hazard in a race in so many ways. Like, you need to be so switched on. You know, if you're in a group, almost like try and go to the front of the group and just try and avoid the potential to get knocked down, because there's so many bits on the floor these days for runners, you know, behind us, let's say, and there's just so many hazards at those water points. So a reminder that you really got to concentrate your way through them. But yeah, what a story. And I think, like, just going back to, you know, we sort of both have come from mass entry starts. So when you get onto that sub elite start or that elite area where, you know, you're next to someone that they're introducing and you're kind of waving to your parents on TV or whatever the case is, it's like, does feel so surreal. And it's like, you did very well to not get too carried away. Obviously I was tracking you quite closely and I knew your first 5K split was speedy, but given the fact that you had so much adrenaline, you actually controlled it really well, especially from that point onwards, and you didn't get carried away too much. Whereas often that occasion can just, you know, become so big. But you know what? It's like, it's a weird feeling because you think, why me? Do I deserve to be on the start line? But then you think about the massive sessions and so much work has got into it. And like, actually, yes, you qualified with that time. You, the record holder, you deserve to be there. So yeah, it's just weird not having come from that background to being in that position now. I can relate that you've just got to soak it all up and enjoy it. And, you know, in my world, I'm obviously, you know, content creating is as important as performance for me, if not more important. So I'm kind of like, you know, do I showcase this or do I, you know, get into the zone? And I think on the really professional high end level, when you're around the world's best athletes, it's like, oof, you got to kind of like, you know, give them the space and the time and the respect they need in order to get into the zones, to hit that level. Whereas I struggle with that. I get distracted easily. I'm, you know, like a kid with sweets. I'm like, this is awesome. This is fun. And, yeah, it's definitely something different to the usual mass starts where, you know, you're having a bit of fun, high-fiving, chatting before the start. But yeah, I know you obviously had a pair of Pro Evos before the race that we chatted through, and then you saved them for Valencia and then you tried them on a couple of days before and they were too small. And often the case with those shoes is that you probably have to go half a size to a size bigger. So yeah, we decided it wasn't the right idea to run in shoes that were too small, but... us runners get on a mission, and you most certainly were a lady on a mission, and you managed to locate a pair in Valencia that fitted you. So yeah, let us know, how easy was it to track down a pair of Pro Evos? Are they easily available? And how did it feel running in them? For those of you that are listening to this that don't know about the Pro Evos, they're pretty much Adidas's like superior super shoe that a lot of people think you can only get one marathon out of. I personally think you can get a bit more, but I've only done one, and then we'll see after London. But yeah, it's pretty much a $500 shoe. So how did you find it? And did you feel like it actually gave you that much more of an advantage?
Yeah, I was like Cinderella trying to find the perfect shoe. yeah, it's right what you said. I did that last Thursday session before I was due to travel on the Friday. Panic set in, like, so I thought I'd tried them on, but yeah, clearly I didn't try them on properly. So I'm naturally a 6.5, a UK 6.5, and you know that's normally my go-to for my Pro 3s, and they fit like an absolute glove. So I thought it was a safe bet, but yeah. 12 times 300 the day before travel soon proved that not to be the case. So I was very lucky. I found a company which was going to be at the expo. They work in partnership with Adidas, Bikili, I think they were called. So a very helpful guy called Diego, a little shout out if he listens. He was able to hook me up with a pair, which he put to one side for me. In fact, he put two pairs aside for me in two different sizes. So very, very lucky I was able to pick some up at the expo as soon as I arrived. And I thought, yeah, we corresponded over them. I know that you'd worn them, and they are good to go straight from the box. So literally did my shakeout running them on the Saturday before the race, and they just felt absolutely perfect. That full size up for me just worked an absolute treat. I mean, the shoe itself, I can only say it's like going for a run with no shoes on, but just being so bouncy. They're a completely different feel from the Pro 3s. And I don't think you get the same pop as you would from a fresh pair of Pro 3s personally, but they're so light, and they definitely give you that forward momentum, and they definitely propel you forward just in a different way. So if it's within budget, I would definitely say try them once. I think for my next marathon, I'm not sure whether I'd buy them again. I would definitely like to give them another go, but I'm very keen to give the Pro 4s a whirl if I can get my hands on those for my next race, just to see how they compare. But yeah, in terms of use again, I must admit, like, when I took them off on the Sunday after the marathon, they looked like they were absolutely destroyed. And after my fall, I was petrified. I was scared to look at them because I thought, what have I done? My toe could be falling out of the front of them at this point. I'm just not sure. But I cleaned them up whenever I got home, and they look as good as new, to be honest. I mean, there's some signs of wear, obviously, on the bottom, because the sole's not quite as hard as a Pro 3. But I would say I could definitely do another 10, maybe another 5K in them. I'll be giving them a go anyway. They're not ready to retire just yet. But yeah, the only downside, I guess, is we know obviously they are slicks, there's no grips on them whatsoever, and that was the downfall at the 28k water station. I just hit the water, which was unfortunately in the road, and probably a white line, lots of concentration, and yeah, they are lethal in the water. So I would say if you're racing in them or running in them at all, like, just avoid rain or water at any cost.
Awesome. I know, like, when I picked up a pair of Pro Evos for the first time, it was the most weird feeling. It literally feels like you holding air, like nothing. I think they're 128 grams, whereas the Pro 3 or other super shoes are probably like around 250 grams. So they're pretty much like half the weight. And 250 grams is already light. So you can imagine, like, picking it up is just crazy. But yeah, if it's wet at all, obviously, you know, I highly recommend don't run in those. But it's such a cool sound to the grip on the floor as well. When you first run in them, it makes like made like a bit of a squeaky sound when I did a 5k full send around Battersea. And I was like, yeah, it just, you know what I found, that it just sort of, you feel like this shoe is almost like the gold standard superior, and it just makes you tap into maybe a little bit more performance. You're like, I'm wearing the Pro Evos, it's business time. Like, let's find some energy, let's do these shoes proud type thing. Whereas I think if you had to run in a pair of Pro 3s or now Pro 4s coming out, time wise, it might make like a few seconds difference. But just because you knew you were in the Pro Evos, you're able to tap into that sort of like, you know, extra reserves that you had. But yeah, what a shoe. Wow. Imagine the shoes we're going to be chatting about in 5 years time. It's just crazy. So let's just take a little bit of a step back. Obviously, you know, you've had such an amazing breakout year, but you actually haven't been running for too long at all. So you just want to give us a quick like background about, you know, when you started, how you got into running, and how you got to in the position you're in now.
Yeah, sure. So, I was a bit of a fun runner. If I look maybe 5 to 10 years back, I did enter the occasional kind of half marathon or event, maybe, well, just a handful, two or three races. And you think you're a runner when you go out and you train maybe once a week. But yeah, I then lost interest and didn't run for years and years, until through about 3 years ago, probably to the day, that I decided to buy my other half a voucher for Christmas for a local running group. Which was like group sessions and a couple of one-to-ones. Needless to say, after the first one, he came home and he was absolutely raving about it. So I was like, well, if he's enjoying it, I need to get myself there as well. So it was just a local running group on a Wednesday night, an hour session, and they just do their intervals. And yeah, it just got me hooked. After a couple of days, I was like, well, I want to do one-to-ones. So we did that probably from like December through to April. And then we went on holiday to Madrid, and there was the rock and roll marathon and half marathon happening, which we didn't know at the time. We just kind of got caught up in it, and the inconvenience of roads being closed, etc., forced us to watch a bit of it. So we kind of said, whenever we get back, well, maybe we should sign up for our first race together. So my other half said, well, we should do a half. So we started looking for halves, and I got my mindset on a full marathon. So that was in April 22, and then October 22 was our first marathon together, and I did Granada downhill marathon, of all marathons, which was 19 miles downhill, and I actually got a time of 2 hours 50, which was my first, what I would say, proper race. So that's the one that really got us hooked, and I've not looked back, really, to be honest. Yeah, my background, I guess, before that, I've always been active. I was like a horsey girl growing up, so I was always running around fields and pretending to be a pony, setting up jump courses. And I guess if you look back, and I don't know, I didn't train specifically for running, but there's probably an element of building fitness and stamina and, I don't know, just like teaching yourself some strength by doing those horse courses and just being out and about all day, which you probably don't think of at the time as training, but yeah, in hindsight, it probably set me up quite well to where I am today. Now 5 marathons down the road.
Wow, only 5 marathons. Okay, so pretty much been taking it more seriously for, like, you know, or getting into it properly for about two and a half years, and you're at 2:39 in the marathon distance now. I mean, you know, coming in at 250, even though it was a net downhill marathon, is still phenomenal. And I know my first marathon was also net downhill. I came in at 3:17, and that was the absolute fastest I could go. And I thought I could probably never get faster than that. So you came in a lot quicker, and your running age is still a lot younger than my running age, let's say. So before we know it, you're going to be pacing me to a sub-220s all around the world. But yeah, amazing, amazing progress. And do you know what? Like, you're never too sort of old to get into running. You didn't take it up as a child or as a teenager very competitively. But what I mentioned there earlier is, like, everyone's got their running age, let's say. So you obviously haven't hammered your body for years and years at high intensity running wise. So it's quite nice that we know your best years still lie ahead of you, which is pretty cool. And I think a lot of the athletes that I coach, and the more and more research I do, like, people are performing better at older ages as time goes on. And it's just incredible to see that, you know, if you manage your bodies correctly and take recovery a little bit more seriously as you age, you're still able to hit that sort of, you know, speed, get that volume in, and run phenomenal times. So yeah, it's really cool to see an inspiration to a lot of people that it's never too late to get in it. It gets to get into it. Okay, I know you obviously based in Isle of Man. I think a lot of people listening probably might not, like myself, have never been there before. What's it like? What's the running scene like? And what's it like to train there? We obviously have regular catch-ups, and I know conditions are pretty brutal. So I feel like, you know, if you train in those conditions that are often unfavorable, and you go and do a race like a Berlin and Valencia in favorable conditions, it's like, sweet, this is awesome. Yeah, I just want to speak us through what training is like on the island.
Yeah, I mean, I was out training in Storm Darrow only last weekend. It was 80 mile an hour winds. I mean, it's just an easy run, but it's pretty extreme. But yeah, the Isle of Man is a lovely place. I definitely recommend anyone to come over. Little plug there. But yeah, it's basically just like a playground for runners and cyclists. I mean, I'm sure if people have heard of the Isle of Man, they've also heard of the likes of Mark Cavendish, who's obviously the most capped cyclist in the Tour de France. But yeah, the hills we have, the weather, the extremities, everything that we have here probably just makes you a more stronger, resilient person, I guess. The countryside, you know, if I go outside my house here, like, within 2 minutes I'm in the country, whereas, like, if I go the other direction, I've got 2 minutes towards the sea. So very fortunate to have everything right on my doorstep. But yeah, it's a really nice place. It's quite a sheltered life, so you definitely have to make the most of travel and getting yourself off the rock, in my opinion, occasionally, just to make sure you don't get cabin fever. But yeah, in terms of, like, being able to train hard, we've definitely got everything that we need here, in terms of, like, the environment. It's a safe place to go out. You know, you can go out any time of any day, and you don't kind of feel threatened or anything like that, which is really nice. But yeah, there's some nice local races as well. So I've benefited from being able to sign up to some of those this year. We have one marathon, which is not very nice, but perhaps we can get you over for it sometime. It's in August, and it's got a couple of nice little hills in it, so I'm sure you'd appreciate that. And then we've got a couple of half marathons and kind of 5k series through the winter, and one in the summer as well. So everything you need, really. And yeah, there's a really good running community over here. The group that I used to be part of, Run Strong, is where I first took up, like, kind of coached running through Christian Barley, who was really good to me and brought me on to a certain degree. So yeah, there really is the ability. If anyone wants to get into running over here, there's plenty of options to go out and get started.
It's always so beneficial to have a good environment around you, and to just have, you know, encouraging people, encouraging routes, other people running, you know, helping you through sessions, bringing out the best in you. So that's really, really cool to hear. Even though the world's so connected on via social media, and, you know, we can see exactly what people are doing, get tips here and there, there's still that human element to it that's super important. you know, to join local groups and stuff like that. So that's really cool to hear. And I know you pretty much spend as much time in an airplane as you do at home traveling to all these races, and with all your travel plans and stuff, I think there's very few months you actually spend the full month at home. But it's cool. That's what running does to you. It gets you to see all these beautiful places around the world. And, you know, we smash the race, let those endorphins release, and then enjoy the travel afterwards. Okay, so do you want to talk us through a little bit about your Berlin Marathon performance earlier this year? So Berlin Marathon, obviously, it was quite risky business. It was end of September. Valencia was beginning of December. So that pretty much left a two-month window. And maybe, you know, it was a bit risky from the point of view that if we're going for the Isle of Man female record, would 2 months be enough time to recover? But you finished Berlin, and obviously I was there as well. It was such a good race that I've got it tattooed on my upper thigh. But we pretty much caught up afterwards, and you said, coach, I don't know if I pushed as hard as I could have. I felt relatively fresh, or felt relatively good afterwards. I think I could have found another level at, and you ran 2:42. So I was kind of like, 2:42 is incredible, but I don't know if I want to be hearing that you could have pushed a bit harder and you didn't push harder, but I feel like that definitely helped aid recovery a little bit quicker in prep for Valencia. So how did you find Berlin Marathon? And do you feel that Valencia is actually faster than Berlin Marathon, or which of the two courses do you feel is faster?
I enjoyed Berlin. I do specifically remember like being a little bit underwhelmed at the finish though, probably because I didn't get that pain factor which I had in Boston in April, and I just felt like I didn't probably work hard enough. Obviously I did work hard, and you know, it was great to get the PB, but yeah, it's a dangerous game, isn't it, when you don't know what you're capable of, and you don't obviously want to go out too hard because you don't want to blow up, because that's the danger, right? You don't want to like smash out the first half and then like your splits just go completely downhill thereafter. So I think like Berlin was almost like testing the water just to see like how the body reacts to putting a little bit more pace. I mean, I knew I'd trained like really well all through the summer. I sacrificed a summer holiday this year just to make sure I got like a really good solid block in before Berlin. But yeah, the thought was like play it safe to some degree, and I remember a lot of people saying it's a great flat course and it's the first flat marathon I've ever run. But a number of people kept saying just be brave with it. You know, you're used to training on hills, but just go out and just see how you go. So I remember before Berlin, people were telling me to just go out and be brave. It was the first flat marathon I've attempted. You know, all the others have either started with a downhill or I've had like hills at the end. So yeah, that was one thing that people were telling me about Berlin, and I thought to some degree I will be brave, and you know, I'm obviously going to push for a PB, but you don't want to almost push too hard. So I shaved 3 minutes off my Boston time, and yeah, I just remember like getting to the end and thinking I did work, but I could definitely work harder. But yeah, like signing up for Valencia, I was quite late to the party for Valencia, so I ended up buying a bib because I never got in at the very start. I mean, it was just like an afterthought. I thought maybe like I haven't done enough this year already, so let's throw a third marathon in there, knowing that it was another flat one. But yeah, like everyone was kind of asking me at home, like, are you going to go for the Manx record? How do you feel? Like, are you going to go for a PB, or, you know, are you just going to cap the year off? And like, as much as I wanted the record, like there's still time. I'm only 3 years into my running career at the moment. And I've got a big year already set up for next year. So I think that almost took the pressure off, knowing that I PB'd twice this year already. And yeah, it's always nice to get a PB, right? And I thought, like, you know, the block that I've done between Berlin and Valencia, yes, it was quite short, and I probably didn't get to, in my head, I like to get to the full distance, like either 40K or 42K in training, and I didn't do that between Berlin and Valencia because of the window that I had. But I knew my training had gone well. I had a minor blip, actually, with my calf. It's just been playing up a little bit, which it turned out to be something or nothing. But yeah, the things like that just kind of play in your mind, and you think like, if I don't get the record, there's still time. So Yeah, whenever I see him like on my watch, like I was good for the PB, and then ultimately when I seen that clock counting down towards the smashing the record, I was like, well, yeah, I've got it. It's all in the bag. But yeah, I don't really know which, like they're both different races. They're both amazing. Like I'd say probably Berlin, I zoned into the crowds and the environment a little bit more, whereas Valencia, I was literally just looking straight ahead. Maybe my positioning at the front of the pack was like a little bit aggressive, in that everyone wants to stick to that blue line. And I really felt that in Valencia. I got elbowed, I got kicked, I got pushed. Everyone's just dead set on obviously not running the extra distance. And I didn't really notice much about the environment, I've got to be honest. It was just one foot in front of the other, get to that finish line. So much so that my partner put the Manx flag down, my precious Manx flag, down on the water stand where my bottle was sitting. He was stood right next to it. He was shouting my name and just grabbed and go. Didn't hear a thing. So yeah, but both equally as good. And it, well, yeah, if I did have to have a preference, I would say I do like Spain. So yeah, I'm probably a little bit more biased towards Valencia.
Amazing how much you're in the zone. And I know with Valencia, because the competition is so big, especially, around the sort of 220, 230, 240, 3, even after 3, like there's just stacks and stacks of people. So you just almost get like caught into it. And it makes fast running seem not that fast because there's so many quick people that target it. But yeah, Valencia, what a city. Such good value for money. Drinks are good. Food is good. The sun shines after the race, hopefully not too much during the race. So yeah, I can't go wrong. And there's no ways after hearing you speak through it that I can't try and go give it a full send there next year. Okay, so what a breakout year you've had. You've been progressing phenomenally. And it's quite nice that you ran Valencia with no pressure because you already had such a good year, and it's amazing what runners can do with no pressure. Obviously, you've now got the record, but you're going into next year with no pressure. You don't have a point to prove at all. But how much quicker do you believe you can get to? What's your sort of ceiling that you think you can get to?
Oh, that's a really difficult one. Yeah, again, I probably wouldn't want to push too hard on, any one race. So if I can keep shaving off 3 minutes here and there, I mean, obviously the margins will get tighter as I progress and get a little bit faster every time, but there's definitely more to give. I mean, like I know, like obviously I'm not the youngest runner, but we know that, stamina comes with age. And maybe look, Sarah Hall, for example, she's 41 and she's just done a 2:23, which is, I think, maybe a PB or close to a PB for her in Valencia. So, yeah, maybe not reach those standards, but let's see where we can go. I'm very determined, I'm very stubborn, and with your help and guidance and the support around me from everyone, let's just see where we go. There's definitely more to give.
Very good answer. Yeah, I had to put you on the spot like that because often people put me on the spot, but you kind of don't want to just splash out a number in your head because that sort of puts you under pressure. But I think you know what? You nailed it from the point of view that like let's just keep aiming for those marginal gains, the 1 minute here, the 2 minutes here, and small one after small one. And when we stack it up at the end of the day, it adds up to something juicy, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, obviously having seen your progress and being your coach, I know that you've still got a lot more in you, which is cool. But we run best when we're enjoying it the most. And I know you love your marathon training, you love your long runs and stuff. So yeah, I'm always having to increase bits and pieces here and there. So that's cool to see. And I think as long as we keep enjoying it, that's when we'll get the most out of it. But you know what I say, ultimately, like your 5K time, 10K time needs to come down, and it's sort of in the position that I'm in now as well. And then we can, so that opens us up. Opens the jaws up bigger into the half marathon and specific, marathons are the one we truly care about. And that'll help us level up, that's for sure. But yeah, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. I know you're obviously racing London next year, Chicago next year, and then potentially Valencia. The carrot is dangling, but we can always decide closer to the time. Okay, so pretty much what would your best piece of running advice be to people listening to this podcast? And then secondly, what is your favorite running session within training?
Oh, I think like running advice wise, it's probably something from my physio and probably coming out from a few little silly niggles, is knowing your weaknesses. So I think, like, we get complacent with the things that we do on a daily basis. And when things are going right, that's when you start to ignore the stuff that you should be doing to maybe look after yourself a little bit more. So I actually picked up a stress fracture after my first marathon, probably through not having the knowledge, or maybe not having any nutrition, or just training too hard, wrong shoe size, number of factors. But yeah, there's a knock-on effect, obviously, after that, in terms of like things just moving up through your body. And I was given like a set of basic exercises, you know, the boring stuff that doesn't really feel like it's doing anything, the simple ankle movements. And yeah, whenever you feel like everything's kind of going right again, everything's back on track, they're the things that start to slip, because they're the boring things that feel like they're not doing anything. And everyone loves going for that run, and it's great to be in the gym and you get a bit of a sweat on, but the basic movements that actually get your mobility and, you know, get your body fired up the way it's supposed to, that's the first thing that kind of lets slip for me. So I think if I could like give anyone one piece of advice, if you know you've got a weakness, just make sure you concentrate on that and always keep working on it, and make sure that you're checking in frequently with someone that's going to give you a sports massage, or, you know, a good physio that can just have a look at your body and just point out any weaknesses, just to make sure that you're on top of it and just avoid those injuries at absolutely any cost. And then in terms of my favorite session, it's probably a tough one, because I, as you know, I absolutely love my Sunday long run. Like, I love the high volume. It's the session that I love to dread, because if you're in a marathon block, you know, like, marathon pace is never going to feel easy, and it's going to hurt. And, you know, like, when you're really determined and you just want to do a good job, like, you have like the fear going into it that you're maybe not going to hit your paces. And I don't know, 9 times out of 10, you set off and you're not wanting to do it because you know it's going to hurt, but you come away from that long session and you just feel so good. Like, you put in the work, and, you know, you might not hit your paces, but you've got the session done, and it's one step closer to where you want to be. But yeah, I also love my Track Tuesday as well, you know, that quick fire sappy stuff, which is so important as well. It's a difficult one, that,
for sure. Both of those sessions leave you with an endorphin kick like no other. But I must say, like, the thing with the track sessions is that it's obviously, you know, VO2 max test, we're hurting, but for short periods you recover quite quickly. Whereas something like a big marathon session, like 4x5K, or in specifically 3x10K, that like puts you in that pain chamber for a long period of time. And I feel like you come out of that, and sometimes those sessions are almost harder than race day. And you think, okay, cool, you know, if I survived that, then on fresh legs with adrenaline, carb-loaded, and a crowd, then it's definitely not going to feel as hard, even if you're running as fast. So, yeah, I feel like those are the sessions we love to dread every marathon block, but we get them through them, and they make us stronger, that's for sure. Okay, finally, last question for you, and it's been incredible chatting to you today, and thanks for sharing all this insight to us. What is coming up next for you for the remainder of the year? Are you letting your hair down post Valencia and lining up strong next year? I know we're targeting a few of the same races. I kind of spilt the beans a bit earlier on what some of your races are next year, but you just want to chat through some of them and which ones you're targeting.
Yeah, so I do have a little bit of time out, so I've got a nice holiday to look forward to down to Cape Town. I've actually found a race to do while I've done that, so I probably need to talk about that one. So we have Brighton in March. I've got a 10K in London actually in January as well, so that should be a little feeler just to see how the off-season month or two has gone. Kick me back into touch. We've got training camp, BA training camp, which I'm really looking forward to. That's out in Cyprus, so it'd be really nice to do that with the squad. That's in March. London in April will be one of the main races, which I'm targeting. Chicago, which we've spoken about, which will be nice and fast, hopefully. And I have also an entry for Copenhagen Half in September, which will be really cool. Oh, and there's the potential that I might be going to the Island Games, which will be really cool. So watch this space. I've got the qualifying criteria, that's in July. So I've met the qualifying criteria, but hopefully I'll get selected. I don't see any reason why not at this point. But yeah, that will be a pretty cool experience to go out and represent the island. And I think that's it at the moment. Yeah, and
Definitely.
thanks for dangling the Valencia carrot.
You just couldn't say no. You couldn't say no. You know what? We've got some time to decide. And I think, like, you so strong and fit at the moment. And we need to take advantage of that. But at the same time, like, you know, marathons are marathons and need to be respected. So we can always see closer to the time on how your body's doing and coping with the training. But hey, if you're feeling amazing and being productive and running good times, then let's live life and why not? But yeah, what a phenomenal year you've had. Honestly, I'm so proud of you. Like, running coaching can be so rewarding sometimes, especially when some of your athletes achieve, you know, national records and stuff. So thank you for keeping me fueled and the motivation. And, you know, us at Best Athletics are so proud of you. And yeah, excited to see you in a couple of months' time, and then almost a month every month on then from all the races and training camps and stuff we have coming up.
Yeah, exciting times, and I'm ever so grateful for everything that you've done to get me to where we are today. I mean, it's only just been a year, I think, coming in January, so watch this space. There's definitely more to be done.
Nice, solid work, proud of you, and boom shakalaka, let's keep going.
Boom shakalaka.